AP Radio News. I'm Tim McGuire. Neighbors say they heard a series of shots, screams, and more shots as five people are killed, two are wounded, inside and outside a home in an Atlanta suburb. Douglas County Sheriff's Lieutenant Glenn Daniels.
It appears at this point that it's a domestic-related situation between a husband and ex-wife.
There were several children among the six people shot by the gunman before he killed himself. Shoppers at a Pittsburgh-area mall scattered when shots rang out last night inside the Macy's. Three people were wounded. Police say they have arrested a 17-year-old this morning. The shopper tells KDKA-TV.
The children were playing in the playground. Why should children have to be subjected to this craziness at the mall?
Two men who were shot are in critical condition, while the third victim, a woman, is in stable condition. More snow for the Northeast. Weather Service says up to a foot and a half of new snow could fall through tomorrow in New England.
This particular system is going to bring these heavy accumulations, but not necessarily in a short amount of time. So it's going to be more of a steadier snow that over a few days will be definitely piling up.
In Boston, hardware store owner Jack Gernon says storm after storm is winter.
It does get a little tiring, you know, at the end of March if it continues to happen. But tough New Englanders know this is what you expect. And, you know, as long as nobody gets hurt, you just deal with it.
Along the Pacific Northwest, more rain from another storm system. Meteorologist Sven Nylimiski says the rain is putting a bit of a dent in the California drought.
This is a welcome return of winter for our area, especially with our drought conditions that we've been having for the past several years.
Lottery officials say there was no big jackpot winner. Last night's $380 million Powerball drawing. Next drawing will be Wednesday. The jackpot will be $450 million. This is AP Radio News. Olympic gold medalist, TV reality show star Bruce Jenner was involved in a fatal four-car accident near Malibu, California. Jenner's Cadillac SUV rear-ended a woman's car that had just been involved in a crash, knocking it into the path of a Humvee, killing the woman. L.A. County Sheriff's Lieutenant John Lekrevin says Jenner was cooperative.
He voluntarily gave a sample of blood to prove or disprove whether he was under the influence. He voluntarily submitted to field sobriety tests, which he passed.
Jenner was not hurt. An Associated Press GFK poll finds views of President Obama have improved slightly. Nearly half approve of how the president is handling his job. On the rise, too, opinions about the direction of the country and the economy. But most feel their own recovery is lagging. Just over a third say their own family has completely or mostly recovered from the downturn. I'm Tim McGuire, AP Radio News.
Hi, everybody. It's David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast, the D.C. area's one and only food and wine variety show.
This Sunday, we'll be joined by Mark Furstenberg. You know him from his famous breads at Bread First, and he's bringing with him the elusive Frank Ruta. They're going to be cooking together. And also, Capital Teas is coming in. They're going to soothe us with some delicious teas.
That's Foodie and the Beast this Sunday at 11, right here on 1500 AM.
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide, but only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
Did you know that birthday parties help build confidence in kids?
Yeah. Did you know that giving kids less sugar before bedtime helps them sleep better?
Oh, totally. Did you know that friendly kids have more friends?
Everybody knows that.
Hey, guys, did you know that most people think they're using the right car seat for their kid, but they're not?
I didn't know that.
Parents who really know it all know for sure that their child is in the right car seat at the right age and size. Visit safercar.gov/the right seat to make sure your child is protected. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide, but only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio. In this hour, you'll hear directly from our region's finest business leaders. Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired and entertained and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Arlington, Virginia offices of the Arlington Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Dana Theus with EmpowerCoaching.com, and I have my co-host with me, Mark Cohen of Optifor. Mark, you want to read our lineup of guests today?
Sure, Dana. We have a great lineup. First is Dan Frank, the CEO of Three Wire Systems. Then Rafael Romeu, the CEO and president of DevTech Systems. Third is Maria Proestu, the co-founder, president, and CEO of Delta Resources. And we'll end today with Judy Marks, president and CEO of Siemens Government Technologies.
Thanks, Mark. First up, we have Dan Frank, CEO of Three Wire Systems. Dan, what is Three Wire Systems?
Three Wire Systems is a company that provides a technology-driven coaching system for uniformed service personnel with quantified results.
What is a coaching system with quantified results, really quickly?
So let's break that down. We have a lot of active duty service members that are becoming veterans. And when they become veterans, they're having issues reintegrating into civilian life, getting jobs, wellness, finances, and the sorts. So our programs help veterans with that transition. We call that type of work coaching. We use a technology platform that helps that coach with their case management of that particular veteran. And when I talk about quantified results is that it's not only who succeeds in our program, but why people aren't succeeding and how we can help those people achieve their successes that they're looking for.
And how big is the company right now?
We're about 100 people. We're also about $100 million in revenue. That's not all associated with coaching, as we have other aspects as our business as well.
So you are a veteran yourself.
Correct.
And please tell us the story of the Third Wire. Like, why is Three Wire the name of your company? It's a great
right.
story.
So I named the company Three Wire. In naval aviation on an aircraft carrier, there's typically four wires that's used to catch an arresting hook, which is on the end of the plane, and that brings the aircraft to a stop on a very short distance. And when you fly a perfect pass, the glide slope brings you to the third wire.
So the third wire is the perfect landing.
Yes, and so a perfect landing in Navy parlance is an okay three wire.
So you started this company because why?
I like to say that I was a corporate refugee, so I spent 8 years active duty in the Navy, got out, went to corporate America, worked in some consulting companies and technology companies, and after about 10 or 12 years of doing that, determined I really didn't like reporting to somebody and being in a large corporation. So I was looking for an opportunity of how to make a living, and that became entrepreneurship.
Did you grow up in an entrepreneurial family?
I did, although I didn't really realize it until later in life. My father is an Army veteran, ended up going to a large corporation, ended up becoming an entrepreneur, starting out in government contracting, moving from California to the Washington, D.C. area. And I look back at my life, and I pretty much followed exactly in that footpath, but I never really thought about it consciously that was what I was going to do.
When you look back on it, and growing up with this man that you have emulated, what do you remember most about being his son?
I grew up in a family where my father was somewhat of a disciplinarian, and my mother was very much an artist. So it was kind of an interesting mixture of people to grow up as parents. I think my dad in those days was, as I mentioned, a disciplinarian and very much attention to detail. He's a mathematician, a trained mathematician, computer scientist. So he really had, I always forget if it's left brain or right brain, but whatever side of the brain that causes that kind of thinking, that's what I grew up under. And on the opposite end, my mom was an artist, so that's what I grew up under there as well.
And you mentioned that your parents were refugees?
My mother was born here in the United States. My father was born in Germany and immigrated over here in 1939.
How did that change your upbringing? You know, when you looked around the other kids you were going to school with, you know, what was different about how you were being raised?
I don't really think there's much different. He doesn't talk with an accent. It wasn't like he had a thick German accent or anything like that. I look at my upbringing as kind of the standard issue, 1960s, 1970s, upwardly mobile family. As my dad got different jobs, we moved. Each successive move, there was more wealth in the family due to his work. So I didn't really see myself as an outlier as compared to other kids.
You mentioned that you've had some turning points in life. What were some of the most important ones?
Right. I've had a number of turning points. First, going to the service, exiting the service, going into corporations. The most impactful in my adult life is deciding to start my own company. I left corporate America. We're going on 14 years ago. Before I started 3Wire, I started a couple other small businesses that failed for various reasons. 3Wire got a hit, and here I am.
So you had two businesses that failed, and you were undaunted. You said, oh, I'm going to do this again. Where were you in that thought process?
Desperation, I call it.
Some people would be desperate and go back to a cushy job.
Right. Well, I was living in California, and when I left corporate America, I wouldn't really call the business I started it was a one-man show. It was me doing sales consulting, which then morphed into trying to start a government contracting business from the West Coast, which didn't really work out. And I had some friends here in the D.C. area in the government contracting business, because that's what the genesis of our company was, and realized that if I wanted to be in that type of business, you have to go to Washington, D.C. and live there. And my wife was in favor of that. She's from the East Coast or from around here. So we decided to sell our house at the top of the market in 2006 in California, and we moved out here, landed in Falls Church. In June of 2006, we purchased a house at the height of the market as well, had a little bit of money to get started, and here we are.
So transitioning from the Navy, which is one of the largest organizations on Earth, to a large consulting firm,
right,
and then back down to your one-man show, and you know, then growing back into a small business, what is it that you want to bring into growing your business today that takes that you learned in those large organizations can be supportive and helpful? And what is it you kind of like to leave, never really bring inside?
Right. So the best experiences are really your worst experiences. So what I mean by that is that in the Navy, I learned about leadership, both good and bad. That type of leadership doesn't necessarily translate directly into civilian life, private sector type of work.
Meaning command and control?
Command and control, but also the fact that it's really birds of a feather. So you're around people that are like you because of the job that you do within the service, whatever your warfare specialty might be. But people are generally tend to be homogenous because you're in a group of, in this case, it was all guys that flew jets. And those kind of guys are all pretty much the same. And when you get out of that homogenous group and you go into the private sector, it's not like that. And the same things that work within that homogenous group don't work across the board in organizations which have more people, different backgrounds.
So give us an example of a type of leadership that you're learning works in a diverse environment with diverse groups of people.
Well, I think a good example of that is when I was in my second career move after I got out of the Navy. I was at a software company, and we got administered the DISC test, which is the personality test, or one of many types of personality tests. And what I scored was I was a high D and a high C, so very dominant and conscientious. But when I was just looking at that, I thought, well, isn't everybody like this? And I look left and right, and I saw, no, they're not. And that was a real eye-opener for me, is that people think differently, and that to lead people and move something forward, people respond differently to different types of input. And so that was a real turning point for me, but still a very much a student of that, because it's very easy to go back to my way and not think about how other people react and how they think and thinking in their shoes.
So talk a little more about the business failures you had and what you learned from that is helping you be successful this time.
I think the primary lesson of that is that if I think there's an expression, if you want to be a lumberjack, you go to the North Woods. If you want to be a an actor, you go to Hollywood. You move to where the job is, and I think that was very instrumental in my success initially, was starting out in federal contracting, is coming to D.C., planting yourself here, and being in that the microcosm of everything government.
So why do you think that is so important? And what I mean by that is, what can you get by being physically in proximity to your clients that you just cannot otherwise?
Right. So I'm very much a believer in face-to-face meetings, people seeing your face. Last night, for example, I had a very limited amount of time. I went to my son's wrestling match, and there was an important event that one of our vendors was having, and I really wanted to go there because I knew there was going to be some people there that I wanted to get in front of. So instead of driving, I just Ubered around town. I got into his event right after the wrestling match, got in there for 15 or 20 minutes. I saw the people I wanted to see. I got that face-to-face, eye-to-eye contact with them, and I really think that helps, because now I can call them in a month or so and take up the conversation again and talk about our mutual interests in working together.
And you have children, you just said.
Correct. I have two boys, 8 and 14.
So is it harder being a dad or heading up a company?
That's a great question. Challenging. I wouldn't put it hard. I always like to tell my first son, my older son, that, hey, I've never done this before. You're kind of my starter son here because I don't have any experience doing this. And so he kind of looks at me with a quizzical look on his face. They both have challenges, but being a dad's great. I mean, that's why I exist, really.
What's the website?
Three Wire Sys. So THREE Wire, WIRE, Sys like system.com. ThreeWireSys.com.
This is Dana Theus with my co-host, Mark Cohen with Opti4. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a minute right after this business spotlight.
And your name is?
David Shulman.
And David, the organization is?
Information Concepts.
And what makes Information Concepts special?
We're a fixed-price, full lifecycle custom software development shop.
Wait. Your fixed-price software development. How long have you guys been around?
32 years.
So how do you manage to do that? You must have some very special processes to make sure that you sell what you can deliver with confidence and then deliver what you sell. Otherwise, you wouldn't be around this long. Do you have any repeat customers?
All our customers are repeat customers.
So you're telling me that customers buy software development from you because they know they get a fixed price. They know what they're going to get. Do you guarantee a timeline also?
Absolutely. Everything's guaranteed. Every screen, every process, every report, line item and priced, and every line item has a date.
Wait a minute. So you're telling me that all the interim processes are dated and priced so that when you get to the final result, there's no surprises?
Exactly.
Huh, and how long have you been doing this for?
We've been doing it 32 years. What we've done in the last few years, if I might, is developed a visualization process that allows the clients to actually see what we're going to build and take it out for a test drive and kick the tires without us writing a line of code.
What's the website address for this organization?
Infoconcepts.com.
Let me have that one more time.
Infoconcepts.com.
This has been your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Dana Theus, with my co-host, Mark Cohen with Opti4. Next up, we have Rafael Romeu, President and CEO of DevTech Systems. Rafael, what is DevTech Systems?
DevTech Systems is an economic consulting firm. We do international development projects, international consulting projects all over the world. We work in areas like education and gender and helping implement policies that improve people's lives around the world.
And how big or small is the organization today?
Today we are roughly 50 to 60 employees inside basically Washington, D.C. We have two offices. We have a third one in Miami, and then we have offices around the world where we implement projects, including Guatemala, Nicaragua, and in Africa.
So you came to this company in part because of your unique background, both your education and your passions in life. But you're the first non-founder CEO. What was it like coming in and running a company?
Well, it's been a great experience. I come from an organization where I spent 15 years working in a very strong, very regimented bureaucracy, very effective, but at the same time, a lot like the military. And so this has been a very welcome development in my life where I can work hard and see results in a small company rather than in a very large army-like organization.
What was that company?
That was the International Monetary Fund.
And you have something in common with the founder of your current company.
Yeah, we have a few things in common. He and I both studied economics. We were both born in Cuba. We both emigrated to this country. He's of a prior generation. So he retired and hired me to continue the company in his stead and to continue his legacy.
And how old were you when you came over from Cuba?
I was five.
You were five.
5 years.
And you were the youngest or the oldest?
I was the youngest of three brothers.
And you went from a very warm climate to?
To Syracuse, New York.
Not a warm climate.
Pretty, yeah, a lot of snow, very cold in the winter. But it's a beautiful city.
That must have been a bit of a shock.
Yeah, yeah. You get to see, I mean, you know, a lot of kids get to see snow the first time when they come visit us in Syracuse. You know, my cousin's in Florida and wherever else.
What was it like? I mean, I know you were only five, but what do you remember that happening, you know, when you go from this warm, very different climate where everybody does not speak English to a cold climate where everyone speaks English? What was really happening then?
Well, it was it coincided with me starting school, and so everything was very different. The food is very different. The you know, you learn to speak English. Your friends are not who they were before, but it was really a wonderful city. The people were incredible to me and to my family. We're very grateful. We were embraced by Syracuse, New York, and it's a city. You know, in upstate New York, was part of the Rust Belt at that time. So economically, the city has not done well, but over the last 20, 30 years, but the people are wonderful.
So, what was your father doing when he came over?
So my father came over, and he has worked very hard in his life because he came over. He was a mathematician in Cuba, and when he came, he was 34, and he had a wife and three kids, and he basically had to start a PhD program, which took him a very long time, about 10 years to finish. And he, in fact, finished as a PhD in statistics and operations research, and worked in the private sector for a while, and then became a university professor, and today he's retired.
What did that mean for your college education? What? Did he have specific requirements for you?
Yeah, he you know, he's old school, so he sees a lot of value in being able to deliver to your clients the more difficult, let's say, mathematical quantitative parts. So for me and my two brothers, he's evolved tremendously. Today you can see with my nephews, his grandkids, he's not who he was when we were little, but he's very accepting. But when we were going into college, he would not pay for our college education if we didn't do something that was very quantitative, very math related. So both of my brothers are engineers, and I ended up majoring in mathematics and economics in my undergrad, and then going on to do a PhD in financial economics.
So how did that strict requirement to not only get education, but the kind of, you know, really quantifiable education, how did that shape who you have become?
What that does is it limits your choices, but it also opens up a tremendous, I don't think he was wrong, I think it opens up a tremendous avenue for quick advancement and growth, and it's an area that I think the United States is still working very hard on, which is to promote what they call STEM, science, technology, and mathematics, and students. So we were, you know, we had a father who pushed us into STEM fields, and of course those are great jobs. What it did for me was allow me to be competitive in a very strong, strongly competitive environment, and at a young age, and move into a great job, which was the International Monetary Fund.
So you got out of the International Monetary Fund and joined DevTech, and you were focused on the economics, the quantitative, doing the analysis and so on. But I understand that now you're actually doing a lot of good works more so than just economics.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
So this is the more enjoyable part of my job, which is to see the actual work that we do on the ground. So when I was at the International Monetary Fund, the kind of work I would do would be to fight it, you know, to fight the European financial crisis. In fact, the last 4 years, I worked nonstop for Spain, fighting the crisis there and kind of running the fiscal recommendations of the IMF, how they should cut their budget, what they should do.
Which is not what you're doing today.
Right. What I'm doing today is you know, you come to a development company and you see the problems in the countries that are low income, that really have very hard conditions. And so, for example, in my project in Nicaragua, I can get on a plane, fly to Nicaragua, then get on a second plane, fly to the coast. Then I get on one of my project's boats, and I go out to these islands where we have schools for little, you know, for five-year-olds. Or we have programs that are incredible in Africa, where we've in the past had to implement essentially programs to fight rape of little girls and also little boys by their teachers in schools. And this is a continent-wide problem in Africa, so we created this program called Safe Schools, where we would do teacher training for 2 hours after school. But the purpose of the training is to both teach the faculty to have sensitivity and not do this, really change the cultural mindset, but then also create a space and time where the girls can walk home safely, and then we create a buddy system for them to get home safely, where they have to check in and so on. And so this is the kind of, imagine the ability to unlock education for young girls, and then they grow up, and these are, they will forever be allies of the United States, and the kind of difference you can make in that country when you have an educated female population that can work and so on.
Do you ever, when you're out in these rural environments and you see those little kids, do you ever sort of connect with them from that five-year-old in a strange place going to school for the first time?
Well, I certainly see that. For them, they have all of the opportunity in the world if they work hard. And I think it is, you know, the job of companies like mine and really of adults to provide opportunities for children. And so I see a little bit of myself in that I was very fortunate to come to the United States and grow up in a country where if you work hard, those opportunities are to a large extent available. Some of these kids don't. Doesn't matter how hard they work, at some point they will hit a ceiling. And what I think we're trying to do with companies like mine is go in and unlock, you know, unchain them or give them an education, give them a safer environment to grow up in, clean water, whatever the need may be, whatever, and push open some of those doors that are closed to them because of circumstance.
Is your dad surprised at what you've done with your mathematics?
I think he has a great respect for academic work. He was, of course, a retired professor, and he looks suspiciously at business people. You know, he asks a question, why?
But he has to be happy that you're.
He knows that I love my job, and he knows the work we do, and he loves that.
Good.
So it's a good compromise.
What's the website?
It is devtechsys.com. So Development Technology Systems, devtechsys.com.
This is Dana Theis with my co-host, Mark Cohen of Opti4. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this business spotlight.
This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your business spotlight. Joining us today is Isabella Fuentes, Marketing Director at BusinessWise CPAs. Isabella, what is BusinessWise CPAs?
BusinessWise CPA supports government contractors, small businesses, and nonprofits with outsourced CFO and financial consulting services.
And what's your role in the company?
I'm the marketing director.
And as a marketing director, what does that mean?
Well, I actually wear several hats. My primary role is to improve and extend the branding of BusinessWise CPA through referrals, client meetings, networking in the DC area, mm-hmm. As well as supporting current client relationships.
And what do you like most about your job?
I like the most that I don't have to be at a desk all day. I'm out and about meeting new folks and learning experiences from other entrepreneurs.
Right. What makes your organization so special in your view?
I believe our added value is that we are not just a number report kind of type firm. We're very much integrated with our clients. They rely on us for all important decisions. We help them not only with the numbers, but on the future growth of the business.
And what is it that the clients appreciate most about the company?
That they can call us and they talk to the same person every time.
Okay, and who's the perfect client?
Perfect client is small to mid-size organization looking to save on a full-time employee and as well as get the added value of the consulting.
Great. What's the website for the company?
www.businesswisecpa.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Isabella Fuentes, Marketing Director at BusinessWise CPAs. This is Les Smolin, and that's been your Business Spotlight. This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us today is Dr. Shirley Davis, President and CEO, The Success Doctor. Welcome, Shirley. Shirley, what's The Success Doctor all about?
It's a global workforce and talent management consulting organization. What we do is track trends and we identify best practices and strategies for organizations around the world of all sizes, all industries, mm-hmm. and help them understand how to get great talent, how to keep it, and how to make sure that they get the most out of it.
And what's your role in the company?
My role is president and CEO, and I actually do a lot of the coaching and speaking and consulting.
And what do you like most about that?
Absolutely love the strategy development and helping to get leaders to that aha moment.
Mm-hmm. And what makes the organization so special, in your view?
Capturing a lot of the great best practices that we've been able to do. And I think, you know, my brand, I build great relationships and I provide them what they need instead of what I want them to have.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think the clients appreciate most about you and your company?
I make the strategies, even though they're global, I make them very, very customized and practical.
Uh-huh. And who, in your view, is the ideal client, the perfect client?
The perfect client is one that has a need, and the perfect client is one that can recognize that there is an opportunity with the strategies that we provide for them to make their organizations better.
Mm-hmm. And what do you personally enjoy most about the work?
I love seeing the strategies come to life. I love seeing the impact and the results that come as a result of it. Mm-hmm. And I love when they call me back and thank me because they've seen change.
That's excellent. And what's the website for the company?
DrShirleyDavis.com. That's www.drshirleydavis.com.
Thank you, Shirley. We've been speaking with Dr. Shirley Davis, President and CEO, The Success Doctor. This is Les Smolin, and that's been your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Dana Theis, with my co-host, Mark Cohen of Optifor. Next up, we have Maria Perestu, co-founder, president, and CEO of Delta Resources. Maria, what is Delta Resources?
Dana, thanks for having me. Delta is a professional services firm. We specialize in providing information technology, systems engineering, and technical authority support to federal government clients, principally the Department of Defense.
And you were one of three co-founders.
Yes.
Why co-found a government contracting business?
One of the reasons that we made the decision to start our own company is that the three of us all had young children, and we were looking for a new way of doing business that allowed us to be successful while also creating a flexible work environment for ourselves and our families.
So, and you've achieved that?
Yes, to a degree. We work a little bit more than we probably anticipated when we started the company, but we also thought we'd never be more than 50 people, and we're up to 280 now. So
you've enjoyed amazing success, but you've kept some of that flexibility that you started.
Yes, we very much promote that throughout the company so that we have a performance-based approach to delivering services to our clients, and our employees are encouraged to work to meet the deliverable requirements for their customers, whether they do it from home or in an office or at a client site. And then when the work is done, they're able to take advantage of time off that they've accrued during those days where they've worked a little extra.
So going back to when you took a jump out into your own business, what was going on with you that you needed you needed flexibility in your work life?
Well, I'm a single parent, so I had an 18-month-old at home, and I was really looking for that flexibility. And and that was one of the main drivers. My partners also have young children or had young children at the time. But in my particular case, I really had that priority for the flexibility. And I also had, there was a little bit of the maybe proving a point when my husband passed away and I was pregnant, I was kind of told by some managers of mine that, well, you'll obviously scale back. You won't achieve what you wanted to achieve on the management track as quickly because of your circumstances. And so there was a little bit of wanting to prove a point and prove them wrong.
And you were able to prove them wrong.
Yes, thankfully.
And you mentioned they even saw that. They came to understand that.
Yes. In fact, it was a very, very quickly overcome. But by then I had sort of put the idea was in my head, and I kind of had that idea of, well, if I can achieve what I thought I could achieve for them, why don't I give it a shot and do it for myself?
And when you were a little kid, did you always want to grow up to be an entrepreneur?
No, not at all. I actually wanted to be a diplomat. So it's an interesting blend. I wanted to solve problems and, you know, bring greater solutions to the government. So that was part of the diplomacy aspect.
And this problem had to do with where you came from?
Yes. Well, I jokingly say I'm going to solve the Cyprus problem. That was why I went and wanted to be a diplomat. So Cyprus was invaded by Turkey in 1974, and my parents, although they left and immigrated to America before then, there is a great number of my family that were made refugees as a result of that. And so it's still a problem that exists to this day. So the diplomatic efforts to solve that problem were interesting to me and something that I thought I could maybe contribute to.
When your family came over, what was your mom and dad doing?
My dad ran a business. My mom was a homemaker. And so in fact, specifically, my dad runs a restaurant, so very typical Greek family of running restaurants. So.
Did you grow up working in the restaurant?
Absolutely. I think everyone who's comes from a restaurant background usually does a stint or two in the family business. So yes, I did cash register, wash dishes, serve customers, make food, all of the above.
And so you knew you did not want to go in the restaurant business.
Absolutely, did not want to do it. In fact, that was something that my father used as a motivation to go to college. You don't want to be doing this your whole life. Go to college, get an education. So that was something. The hours were significant, and of course, the responsibility was challenging. Of course, I ended up still being an entrepreneur. So
I was going to say, so when you had that choice to jump out and go to work for yourself, was the fact that you had seen your father growing up, was that helping you want to go out on your own, or was it actually working against you?
You know, actually, I didn't think of it that way at the time. I do believe that it absolutely rubbed off on me, the entrepreneurial spirit, and we certainly encouraged that throughout Delta with all of our management team. But, you know, I thought I was going to just be a consultant, and, you know, we were just going to be a small little outfit, and it wasn't going to be the same. But I think, you know, it is the same when you're running a business, whether it be, you know, a restaurant business or a consulting firm. So you have responsibility for people, and you really have to engage with clients, your workforce, to make sure you stay successful.
What surprised you most when you went out on your own?
The amount of things that you have to learn to run your own small business. You have to learn so many different aspects that you never would have thought of. I've become an expert on healthcare policy and, you know.
You mean for your own employees.
Right, for my own employees. What's the best program to put in place? 401ks, compliance with accounting principles, and then, of course, you know, I've learned a lot about federal contracting, but that I expected. The other stuff, not so much.
So how did you learn all those things? Just sort of hard knocks?
A little bit, yeah, on-the-job training. We also, you know, my partners and I, we divided and conquered, so we leveraged our strengths and our areas of expertise, and then we learned from each other, and we have some great relationships with vendors that we do business with as well.
So I want to go back a little bit to the decision, say, I want to leave the company I'm in where I've got security, I've got this baby at home I'm taking care of, and I'm going to charge off and start my own company with some partners. What is it about you that lets you do that? And where did you first notice that?
I guess it's what first made me. Part of it was certainly the desire to have that flexibility. That was one of the big things. But I think I had always been very successful in everything I did. I was very comfortable in our industry. We knew it really well as a group. So that really allowed us to go and take that step to do that. There were also different things going on in the market at the time. Our employer was graduating from a small business status to large business, so we really thought we could be the small business of choice to work with our former employer. It was also a little bit different from an environmental perspective on how to get business to smaller firms via different contracting mechanisms. And it was also the year we started in 2000, which was the first year following Congress's passage of legislation for woman-owned businesses and federal contracting.
So I'm curious your perspective, because you have two male partners.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if you have observations about the differences in leadership styles between men and women and how they work together complementary.
Delicate question.
I know.
My partners are great. What's really great about us, and I feel very fortunate, is that we're very complementary and we complement each other's skills. But if I had to identify just difference, I think I'm definitely the collaborator of the group, very much about dialogue and inclusiveness, which I think is the nature of my role and why I migrated into the CEO role. And so my partner, who's the COO, can be a little more in the more traditional hierarchical structure of, you know, follow the chain of command, particularly because we're military. Similarly with, you know, my partner who's the CFO, he's got his very structured policies and procedures. So they both have great teams, and we all work as a team. But I tend to be a little bit more of the jump down into the, you know, rank and file and find out what's really going on and
See your collaborative abilities as helping you be CEO successfully.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm also curious, this idea of flexibility, you know, so many times we hear about the single mom, you know, like you mm-hmm. are, who wants flexibility. And there's a stereotype that, oh, maybe she just wants to, you know, spend all her time at soccer games and stuff. And I hear you talking about it as a business asset, an ability to serve your customers more flexibly in a way that serves their needs and your own and the needs of your employees. And that's a different way of looking at the ask for flexibility.
Well, I think that's the key is the interpretation. In a lot of the media and a lot of the discussion out in the marketplace right now, when you talk about flexibility, it's often talked about as a one-sided dynamic, but it's really not. It's got to be a balance. When people say work-life balance, we really promote balance. So sometimes there are times where I can't go to the soccer game. I have to, you know, do work because it's part of the balance. But sometimes I can stay home when my daughter's sick and I have a team that can back me up, and it works out. And I still get the work done. I might work from home because of a flexibility requirement, if you will. But we really work to balance it and create an advantage, not just for ourselves or our employees who desire the flexibility, but also for the customers.
And I know you said that in the beginning of this journey, you were widowed.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering if your husband were here today, would he be surprised at what you've done in the last 15 years?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. He was very supportive of my – we were very complementary personalities as well. So, you know, he kind of knew I tended to the leadership kind of role.
Good. So what's the website?
DeltaResources.com.
This is Dana Theus with my co-host, Mark Cohen. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com. We'll be back in just a moment, right after this business spotlight. Joining us for this business spotlight is Wes Burnett, partner at Opti4. Wes, what is Opti4?
Opti4 is a securities firm that integrates legal, tax, and financial and risk in order to offer optimal results for clients.
Who's your perfect client?
perfect client is someone who actually would like to combine services, make their life simpler, and is very family-oriented. Our firm itself is very family-oriented. We love helping families take care of their own, and that can be multi-generational.
So what would a family need when they would come to you?
Typically, what they're doing is trying to simplify their personal life by trying to have somebody else worry about their legal and their tax and financial affairs and present them with solutions rather than questions.
Solutions rather than questions. So give us an example of a good solution.
A good solution is something that results, for example, in the lowest tax bill, the greatest savings, and taking care of the values important to the family, like saving for college for children or grandchildren or something along those lines.
So what do you enjoy most about your work?
My clients. Although a second place close would be my staff, because I recruit very specifically people who have the same values as our clients. So we truly are very involved with our clients' lives, and they are family to us.
What about your family? Are they in the business too?
No. Although there's certainly plenty of lawyers and financial advisors and so on in the business, but no, they all have their own lives, and we're very pleased, quite frankly, with that. I actually have a wife who's a teacher for 42 years, so I take a lot of my values from her.
What is the website?
Optifor.com, OPTIFOUR.com.
Thanks for listening to this Business Spotlight.
This is Peter Schwartz with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining me for this segment is Doug Kay, who is a principal with a firm called Offutt Kerman. What is Offutt Kerman, Doug?
Offutt Kerman is a full-service law firm in the Mid-Atlantic region with offices from Philadelphia all the way down to Tysons Corner, Virginia, where I work.
Right, and you're a lawyer with the firm?
I'm a lawyer with the firm.
What practice area do you specialize in?
I mostly do work in commercial litigation, although I also do work in doing criminal defense and personal injury, anything that gets me to trial.
Anything that gets you to trial. Well, why do your customers appreciate you?
I think they appreciate me because I am a careful and sympathetic listener, and I try to offer concrete solutions to their most vexing legal problems.
Well, give us an example. Do you have one, without mentioning specifics, a recent example of where you were really good at this? How about your favorite client up till now, without getting into too particulars there?
I represented a fellow who was in a commercial lease, and the landlord was determined to make him pay more than he should have been paying. And we had to go to court, and we had to go all the way through trial, and the client really appreciated the effort, and we got an excellent result for the client. And that was very satisfying, and since then he's been talking me up all over town, so I can't thank him enough.
Yeah. What's the best part of practicing law for you?
I would say that it is taking people through difficult circumstances when they think they don't have any options and trying to find a good solution for them.
Great. What's the website address for the law firm?
www.offuttkerman.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Doug Kay, who's the principal with Offutt Kerman. This is Peter Schwartz, and that was your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Dana Theis, with my co-host, Mark Cohen of Optifor. Next up, we have Judy Marks, President and CEO of Siemens Government Technologies. Judy, what is Siemens Government Technologies?
Thanks, Dana. Thanks, Mark. Great to be here. Siemens Government Technologies is a separate company inside of Siemens, the global conglomerate, German company, that focuses Siemens products and services in healthcare, infrastructure, energy, and industrial applications, and basically accelerates their product and service placement with federal government.
And how big is this division that you run?
Well, you know, I have the privilege of being an accelerator, if you will, on all of Siemens. So we've got, and Siemens here in the U.S., we've got 46,000 employees, and my goal is to leverage my part of the company, which is smaller than that, but my part of the company to take all of the strength of all those U.S. employees and global employees and bring that to the U.S. government.
So in our earlier conversation, and you volunteered that one of the things that you love about your job and that you bring to the job is sort of an entrepreneurial spirit. And so you must have run your own company before this, right?
You know, I think we all run our own companies, whether it's in a corporate environment or independently. I love growing businesses inside large companies, and I've been blessed to have that opportunity at my predecessor employer and now at Siemens. So to me, every opportunity is an opportunity to grow a company. I happen to now have the structure and the talent around me to do that. But I think it's all about growing share and growing employees.
And you've been doing that for very large companies.
I've only done it for large publicly traded companies my whole career. I'm going into my 31st year.
So when you were a kid, did you have experience with entrepreneurialism?
I certainly was exposed to it. I was raised with a family business, and I think you learn so much from the role models that are around you in life. And I think as leaders, that's incumbent on all of us to be those role models. But I did. I grew up in a family business. My father owned a department store in suburban Philadelphia.
This wasn't a big chain.
This was a quantity of one. a local department store.
What was it called?
Weinberg's in Havertown, Pennsylvania. And I just think it gave you a great opportunity to see how people buy, how people interact, and to provide a value proposition, even in those days.
Yeah, it wasn't called a value proposition.
Oh, gosh, no. We didn't have fancy words like that. What we just tried to do was provide the best service in town.
And so did you work in the department store?
You know, we all did.
How many brothers and sisters?
I have a brother and a sister, both older, and we all were kind of raised and worked there, and I think just got a great value system because of it.
What was your favorite job in the department store?
My favorite job was when I was behind the counter and had the ability to close a deal. And I guess, you know, as you look in life, you continue to close deals in business. There it may have been a, you know, one transaction, one product at a cash register at
but
times.
But you still get that feeling of,
Absolutely. And, you know, it's no different today. Yeah. It's still a thrill.
Some things never change.
Yeah.
So you told us a great story about learning about business from your dad at the kitchen table. Every night, he brought home a deck of cards.
He did. And, you know, everybody has interesting kitchen table stories. But I vividly remember at the time, and I can't even tell you the size of it because it was non-standard, a small deck of cards. And as we'd sit down to dinner, the question was, did we make the day? And what he was doing was he had a deck that showed by department for that day, year over year, sales. So, you know, today we look at it, and a lot of us live quarter to quarter, and we look at year-over-year growth and challenges. He actually would bring it home, and we'd either know, was it a good day or bad day? And if it was really far off or an anomaly, you'd say, oh, yeah, there was a snowstorm last year, remember? So, you know, it's that kind of trend analysis. It's kind of the analytics you did at the kitchen table. But we always directionally knew, and we were all vested in it.
What happened when there were a series of down days? How did the family handle that?
I think we were somewhat protected from that in terms. I mean, we didn't say, yeah, we were down 2.3% or there wasn't precision like that by any means. It was just directional. You know, he worked long hours. Retail is a hard business. It still is. And I remember since none of us went into the business after we, you know, went to college, we all went to different professions. We all said, boy, that retail's a crazy seasonal business and long hours. And yet I know my siblings and I all have seasonal businesses and all work long hours. So, you know, it's funny what you think as a child and then what you experience in life.
So where'd you go to school? What did you learn?
So I went to Lehigh University in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, and graduated as an electrical engineer. And basically learned that you can solve any problem with enough resources and time, almost every problem solvable.
So electrical engineer, and yet all through your career you've been an entrepreneur inside big businesses. How does that come together?
Well, I think I think every day we solve problems, even as an entrepreneur. I think you lift up, you try and understand the landscape and the environment, and then you try to bring the best resources you can, whether it's technology, people, bring it all together. And I've always, you know, it's been, as I said, over three decades. So technology's advanced so much that every day is a new challenge.
So how old were you when you first noticed that you were a problem solver?
I don't know that you ever go back and know that there was this critical moment that you solved your first problem. I think everyone solves problems in their own way. I like bringing together people, to solve problems. And that, to me, you know, that's the heart of collaboration, right? And alignment. So to grow a business inside a large company, you can't do it alone. You need support from above. You need to work your peers. You need to get the resources you need, especially when you're going after a new market.
Now, would you agree with me that it's a pretty rare engineer that would actually understand that and be able to pull it off?
Maybe years ago. I think the engineers of today, undergraduate and in graduate school, are getting far more exposed to collaboration, to team building, to leading. Not sure how many are extroverts naturally, but I think the more they get comfortable in their domain and whatever that domain is, I think we're migrating there.
But you didn't go get formal training in business management and leadership or things like that, right?
No, it was all on-the-job training, and I had some great role models, and I had some great training. I worked for some of the greater large corporations who provided the framework, and then you tested it out. And some things worked, some things didn't. You learned from what, you took role models, that things you liked, and you emulated that and worked it into your own model, and things you didn't like and said, I don't want to do that. And so, you know, as you move up in your career and you have the ability to influence others, hopefully you've created a style that takes the best of what you've learned and applied it.
Tell us about your mentors in this journey.
You know, I've had some tremendous mentors, and not, you know, not one in specific, and not one. So I would tell you it was a combination of people who believed in me and who I could use as sounding boards with no penalties. And to me, that was probably that safe environment where you could say, what do you think about this? You know, do you think something like this would work in this environment? I found the mentors weren't there to help me technically. What they were there to do was help, how would the organization deal with it? Because when you're in a large corporation, and I'm sure even in small, it's all about the interplay and how are others going to react. So the politics, all those things to look out for. That's what mentors really helped with, and hopefully what I'm helping others with now.
Well, and it's interesting because you're talking about solving problems, but there's a lot of different kinds of problems. Some of them are technical and some of them are human. And it's, I'm hearing from you that, you know, great leaders learn those human problem-solving skills at least as well as the technical ones, if not better.
It's absolutely true, Dana. What the goal is, to, as I've learned through my career, is how you can lead and pull together a group of people to solve those problems. Any leader doesn't have all the answers. It's bringing those different points of view. You know, we call it diversity. It's diversity of thought. It's people approaching problems differently every day. And it doesn't have to be solved the way you may think it has to be solved as the leader. It's finding the best solution for the customer, for the mission, whatever you're serving.
What's the website?
Website, Siemens. G-O-V-T, let me spell it for you, SIEMENSGOVT.com.
This is your host, Dana Theus. I'd like to thank our sponsor, the Arlington Chamber of Commerce, for giving us this wonderful facility. I'd like to thank my co-host, Mark Cohen with Opti4, for helping me structure these interviews. And Mark, would you like to thank our guests?
Sure. Dana, first today we heard from Dan Frank, the CEO of Three Wire Systems. Second was Rafael Romeu, the CEO and President of DevTech Systems. Third was Maria Perestu, co-founder and President and CEO of Delta Resources. And just now we have with us in the studio Judy Marks, the President and CEO of Siemens Government Technologies.
I'd like to thank our listening audience, you, for listening. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a radio show. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Executive Leaders Radio, the region's premier radio show highlighting local executive leaders. We hope you've enjoyed the show here on 1500 AM. You can learn more about Executive Leaders Radio by visiting executiveleadersradio.com or tune in next time right here on 1500 AM. That's executiveleadersradio.com.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTLP FM HD2 Braddock Heights Frederick, the Washington, D.C. home of Navy Athletics. Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO.
Federal News Radio's DoD Wednesday. At 3, DoD reporter Jared Serbu hosts On DoD, a discussion with senior managers about how the department meets its mission. At 4, in-depth host Francis Rose brings you Pentagon Solutions, a smart discussion on the issues and challenges of the defense community. Plus daily DoD updates, mornings and afternoons, Monday through Friday. DoD Wednesday on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
This paid commercial may not